Yesterday, we marked the International Day of Nonviolence, and we are advocates of nonviolence and peace every day. Now, let's talk more about this. Now, the General Assembly, in a resolution adopted on the 5th of June 2007, established the commemoration of the International Day as an occasion to disseminate the message of nonviolence, including through education and public awareness. Now, the resolution reaffirms the universal relevance of principles of nonviolence and the desire to secure a culture of peace, tolerance, understanding, and non-violence. Now, we have the Executive Director of the Organization for Non-Violence and Development, Dr. Moses Mande John. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning to you, Irene Lasso, and thank you for having me in the studio.
Right. So just help us understand the importance of recognizing the International Day of Non-Violence, most especially in South Sudan.
Well, thank you. As you have correctly said it, this day is actually the birthday of Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi, an Indian leader who actually spearheaded the independence of India, was born on the 2nd of October. And the United Nations, in its resolution, actually on 15th of June 2007, they declared that day as International Day of Nonviolence. So declaring this day means recognition to what Gandhi did in his country. But actually celebrating this day goes beyond the legacy of Gandhi. To us in South Sudan and South Sudanese in particular, this day means a lot. One, it reminds us that, yes, this country came to existence through a long period of struggle, which involved actually armed but also an armed struggle.
Right.
And now that we have a country of our own, do we still need to fight? Okay.
Mm.
That is a question we need to ask a South Sudanese. This is the time to remind ourselves that guns must be put on silence.
Right.
Because we don't need to use guns again, because our country is already independent. We need to focus on how do we nurture this country and how do we develop this country so that the country begins to offer the badly needed social and development services to the people. And
right.
That's what people are expecting. So this day actually reminds us of that.
Right, and I want to go back to that question. Because we have our country, do we still need to fight? But we need to recognize that we still have challenges of violence. We still have pockets of violence in most parts of the country.
Yes.
So, when you look around, the peace building efforts that are being given out. So, how can they respond to the challenges we face today as we try to foster a change in our communities?
Most of the violence we see in our country is mostly politically motivated. That's what I will say it very clearly without any fear of contradiction. They are politically motivated because we still have individuals who believe that for them to have access to power, they need to fight using weapons. And that's why we in the civil society, we always say we should promote those who seek power through peaceful means rather than promote those who do so, using violence.
Hmm.
The last option for us as people, I think, is the Araxis. The Araxis provides the last chance for us to actually take this country to a very peaceful situation. And therefore, it is very important that we should promote the culture of nonviolence. Hmm. We should listen to people who have grievances, even political parties who have grievances. We should listen to them and sit together at the same table so that we can find a solution to whatever grievances that they have.
Right.
We have a responsibility as a country. We have responsibility as leaders. We have responsibility as the people of South Sudan to do so.
Right. Well, in the past, you have spoken about the need to localize peace-building responses that are culturally relevant to our communities. How can we improve on this?
Our cultures are very rich with values of peace. Take, for example, community where I come from. I come from Western Equatorial State and from Mundu in particular. In 1970s, before the Addis Ababa Agreement was signed, an enemy plane which was coming from Khartoum crashed, was forced actually to land in Mundu.
Mm-hmm.
What did the people of Mundu did? You know, the army, actually the rebel commander in the area, said he protected these people.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the Mundu people are very peaceful people. God cannot allow this plane to crash around our area. for us to kill the enemy. Because our culture says when your enemy visits you, he is a guest. Mm. He is no longer an enemy. You serve him, provide food and water to him, and save him, take him to the next garrison where he can be free. When you meet in the battlefield, you can still fight. That's what our culture says as Mundri. Is this the same thing happening today? If I can ask, I think not really.
Mm.
I will say this, and this is the most unfortunate part. Why did we have to destroy our cultures that actually promote peace? You know?
Right. So now let me shift your attention a little bit to the current situation, which is about the election talks. This is a very crucial moment to all of us, people of South Sudan. And it's also a potentially delicate matter. As peacekeepers, what are you doing on the ground to ensure that elections do not become a source of conflict?
One, the question of security is the prime responsibility of the sitting government. That's Artigono. That's their role. We in the civil society, we can do nothing actually to help people put their weapons.
Mm.
We have been advocating for nonviolence. We have been advocating for people not to use weapons. But of course, the prime responsibility is the government. What I'm hearing, that is actually a disarmament act bill is actually on its way to the parliament, and once the bill is passed, the government is going to disarm the people. That's a very positive move. Second to that, we should go beyond disarming the people by actually preparing the mindsets of the people by asking the question, do they really need weapons?
Right.
We don't see weapon shops in South Sudan, not even in Juba, as we see in Khartoum previously. Now, where are these people getting the weapons from? So where the weapons come from should actually be closed.
Mm.
If that is not done, even if the communities are disarmed, they will still have access to weapons.
Right.
Therefore, we should think beyond disarmament.
Mm.
You know, that's what I'm seeing. There are some positive examples happening already, which we really need to appreciate. Like, for example, Rumbek. Rumbek used to be, Lake State used to be
spot.
A hot spot.
Yeah.
But of late, we have seen the governor and his team. They have been doing some great work, and the state is at least coming to a state of peace, which I think other states need also to learn from that experience and actually replicate it. And
right.
That will actually make elections context to be more peaceful so that people can focus on exercising their democratic rights in a free and fair elections.
Right. Now, over the weekend, we were covering the existence of holdout groups in Central Equatoria. Well, these are people who are not recognizing the revitalized peace agreement. So what can be done to address this and make sure that the issue does not become a problematic issue in the near future?
The Rome initiative should be reactivated. We all know that through the Rome initiative, the holdout groups were engaged. The government and the whole our groups, they have been in talks. That talks need to be reactivated so that at least the parties can reach a common understanding over to bring about peace and ensure that there is peace during elections. Second to that also, I think implementation of the R-axis is very important, you know, because you know, when the implementation of the R-axis is taken more seriously and things are moving in the right direction, it actually doesn't provide any loophole, you know. And therefore, it is very important. My advice is that parties to the revitalized peace agreement should actually embark more seriously on ensuring that the remaining provision of the agreement is implemented before elections are held.
Right. Now, lastly, what are the country's priority areas that will ensure that issues are resolved in a non-violent way, and what can be done at the national level in a way that we must be the priorities of those tasked to lead South Sudan?
One is actually we have to agree on how do we want to move this country from transitional period to a democratic period. And that should be a priority for all of us, the government, the civil society, and the citizens. And second, we also have to ask ourselves that now that we have an independent country, do we still need to fight? Do we still need to fight? The question, if we find an answer to this question, I think we can find a good solution. And to me, the good solution is that we need to sit down as the sons and daughters of this country to come up with a plan so that we can grow this country, and so that this country can begin to deliver the needed services to the people, because mm-hmm. that's what the people are expecting all the time. Mm. Because we engage with people on daily basis, and what we hear is that people wanted to see a situation where their children can go to school, not only any school, but a school that provides quality education.
Right.
They want to see that they can, when they are sick, their family members can be taken to a hospital or to a private hospital that offers affordable health services. And of course, so that people can live their life free from fear of insecurity, mm. and also they have the opportunity to express themselves freely without fear of intimidation.
Right. And Dr. Moses Mande, John, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And that leaves us with only 12 minutes at the top of the hour. Good morning. You're listening to the Miraya Breakfast Show, and this is where the nation's biggest conversations begin every morning. Dr. Moses is the Executive Director of the Organization for Nonviolence and Development. Well,